Simply Financial with Christopher Calandra, Certified Financial Planner, is an innovative, comprehensive, informative, and cutting-edge podcast that discusses financial topics ranging from personal finance, economics, politics, and personal growth. Simply Financial will cover intriguing and thought-provoking questions so that the listener can simply increase their financial IQ.
Welcome to episode 46, season number 3 of the Simply Financial podcast. Hopefully you listened to last week's episode, which was part 1 of my interview with John Heyer. If you haven't, I would recommend stop this episode and go back to last week's episode. Then it'll make the most sense. Once you've listened to that, you definitely want to listen to the finish of my discussion with John. It's an excellent one. I think you'll enjoy it. I talk with folks about having a wealth-building plan in the sense of, you know, take inventory of what you have in terms of intellectual capital, what assets you currently have, what income you're going to expect from one or more sources, and then to figure out how you could position your assets to build wealth. So just an easy classic example, you work, you make X number of dollars, how much of those dollars are going to go to live your life, you know, pay the bills, enjoy yourself, and how much of that income can you use to build wealth, whether that's to put it in a 401k, invest in real estate, a college fund, build up a bank emergency fund, pay down debt, student loans, credit cards, car loans, that kind of thing. If you could come up with a number that you want to build wealth with from this upcoming year's income, then you could work with your professions, your professional team, your accountants, hopefully your financial planner like I am. I'll raise my hand to help on that. And then to figure out how to deploy that money the most effective way to build wealth that's consistent with your goals and objectives. Does that make sense?
Oh, heck yeah. Heck yeah. And there are a lot of personal decisions involved there. How much do you really need? You know, I'm all for living well, and I do. But sometimes, you know, our culture has strengths and weaknesses, and traveling the world, speaking a few languages, I get to see some of that from the outside. Americans at times tend to want more than is necessary to be happy. On the other hand, they're also a very productive, hardworking people. So I guess it depends on what you want. It goes back to that why.
Sure.
In our personal case, we live well, but not extravagantly, so it makes it a lot easier to be free, which matters more to me.
So at this stage of the game, this might be an unfair question, but you'll maybe just have to deal with it or say I won't answer. But at this stage of the game, if you had a choice for increasing income or having more leisure time, non-work time, you would start to gravitate to the latter, right?
Yeah, I'm planning on it. Because of our status in Puerto Rico and because our kids all are in college now, this is the first year that that's happened, I'm actually able to focus more on the business than I have in the past. You know, we're very pleased with the kids. We focused on bringing them up well and enjoying our time with them, and we have. And they want to be around us, and they come visit us. But I'm able to focus on the practice in a way that I could not for the last 20 years, and that's not a complaint. That was a choice, a deliberate choice, and I'm happy I made it. So for the next 4 to 5 years, it's increase the income and build a system, and then just as grandkids start to show up, which we've already discussed with the kids, the plans on that, I start to back off, start to let people in the practice have an equity stake and focus more on the big, hard issues that they bring to me and continue to make drain, but start to back off some and let them have some ownership. So that's, for us, the plan. And it's based totally on where we're at in life.
So it seems to me that people that might be listening, a certain aspect of the audience, they're going to be not intimidated by the idea you need to have a wealth-building plan. But I just wanted to talk with you a bit, John, about this doesn't need to be some 40-hour project. That you can do the basics of, you know, I want to max out, I'm just using these as examples, I want to max out my 401k, I want to reduce my mortgage by X number of dollars by the end of the year, I want to, you know, fund my child's college fund to X, you know, things like that. This is, I don't want people that listen and think, have a wealth-building plan that can be very, could be a big project depending on the complexity and the wealth that you've already created. But at its basic level, this is not something that's going to require a ton of time to prepare. But by doing this, you set yourself up for success because, like with the goal setting, I think if you don't have a wealth-building plan of some sort, and ideally would be in writing like your goals, you're not likely to be as efficient in winning with money because, as you just described, life is hectic. We're all pulled in multiple directions, and we have to juggle various priorities. And so being purposeful in creating wealth, not because money is the most important thing, it's not, but it is pretty important. And when you are financially fit, life tends to be easier than when you're not. So can you just speak to people that are listening about the simplicity of this, that it doesn't need to be a scary, intimidating thing to have a wealth-building plan?
Well, that's the goal. That's part of why we have the other principle, the team. Right? The team shoulders a lot of the burden. You still have to be in charge and direct it. You have to have a sense of who you are and what you want. That may or may not be large. It may or may not be complex. A lot of that depends on you. But there are others who implement that. I don't manage my own properties due to lack of time, and frankly, I'm not very good at it. There are others who do that. So in terms of my time, it's reviewing what they do once the system is in place. You know, when it comes to planning, it reminded me of a great quote from Eisenhower. Plans are useless. Planning is invaluable. In other words, plans never last. They always change. They never survive contact with reality. But having done the planning when things change, you've got a system in place that allows you to adapt. You've thought ahead about how to react to certain things. Is it going to be large or complex? You know, that depends on you. I think that's subjectively driven. It doesn't have to be, I think, is the point you're making. And if you want it to be simpler, that's fine. Understand what that means and where it gets you. It's neither good nor bad. It's so subjective and choice-based, as is where you're at in life. You know, someone who's just getting started, young, hungry, maybe doesn't have kids yet. People are waiting longer and longer for that. They've got time to hit career in their younger years in a way that at least my, you know, our generation did that a little bit differently. So that's another thing to think about. The timing of all this
is
different
for
the newer generations.
I love the Eisenhower quote. I'm not sure if I was ever exposed to it, but it's funny. Eisenhower has kind of run through this conversation because you talked earlier about, you know, doing things that are urgent. And I don't have the graphic for folks that go to this podcast at my website. We'll include it. But you ever look at Eisenhower has the, I forget what it's called, but it's a quadrant, and it's urgent, what's important. Here at Elliott Wealth Management, my team and I, it's something that we really stay aware of because a lot of people do what's urgent as opposed to what's important. And if you only do what's urgent and never get to what's important, you're going to end up failing in whatever was supposed to be done in the important quadrant. And I know it's tough to talk about because I don't have the visual, but you sound like you're familiar with it. I think that's one of the most impressive, simple pieces I've seen on time management and increasing effectiveness.
You know, he was so underrated. He actually went out of his way to kind of look like the bumbling oaf who just played golf a lot. He liked people to underestimate him, and then he would hand them their heads. Going back to Hitler, ask old Adolf how that worked out for him.
Sure. No, that's good. That's good. So the next thing I wanted to talk about is tracking progress. And so in my 7 wealth building rules, John, a number of them are my spin on what's out there a lot, you know, setting goals, building a team. But I think tracking progress, if there's one of the 7 that I think is under utilized or not spoken about enough, I think, is tracking progress. Because we talked about the goals, the preparation, have a wealth-building plan, talked about how you need a team. But I find that not enough attention is paid to tracking progress. So let me give you an example. In my household, and we've done this for a while now, and it's been enormously successful, is we keep track of our net worth statement. In business, it's a balance sheet. A business keeps track of its assets and its liabilities. We do that at the personal level. So every quarter, I add up all of my assets. And when you have debt, you add up all of your debt. And the way that you figure out your net worth is simply to subtract your, and by the way, John, I know you know this. This is for people that are listening, is the way that you figure out your net worth is you take your assets and subtract out your debts, and that will give you your net worth. And this really distills down how you're doing with money to its very basic level, because you want to build wealth over time, and this net worth statement is going to tell you how well you're doing at the money game. It's not the most important thing, but it's pretty important. And there's really only two levers you could pull, John. You could increase the assets, right? Common sense. And or you could decrease your debts, at least until they get to zero. And figuring out how to build your assets and reduce your debts, if you have any, is a pretty good way to track your progress to see how you're doing with money. What do you think about that strategy?
Again, you know, if you don't have a measurable metric, that means whatever you're doing doesn't really get measured. And if it doesn't get measured, you'll never do as well as you could have done. And for most people, you'll actually do rather poorly. Measuring is key. You can come up with good metrics. That's a great thing to talk to your advisors about, is what is a good metric? How do we measure it? Is this an efficient thing? In other words, is the amount of time spent measuring it producing a good enough result? Then you have to follow the metric, even if you don't like what it's telling you.
Yes, I find it very motivational, because looking at it each quarter, and my wife Joelle and I, you know, we sit down and we go through it. It's not, again, you know, hours at a time. It's like a 10 or 15 minute conversation, and that helps with, hey, you know, we set some goals. Are we achieving the goals? Are we winning with money? Have we had setbacks? We're going to be able to see it here. And it's very motivational that I could go back quarter after quarter over these last bunch of years to be able to see how my wealth has grown. Years ago, I had debt, and now I don't. And that in and of itself is very satisfying. But along the way, I was able to see how my debt was coming down. As I paid off debt aggressively, as debt was retired, I was able to see that on my net worth statement. Additionally, as I add to my 401k and other investments and assets, including real estate, I would see my assets go up. Now, for example, I have a daughter in college. My son is not in college yet, but you know, we built up the college fund. Now I see on my net worth statement the college fund is coming down. As I pay the tuition, that part of the asset section on my net worth statement is declining. Now, that's by design. It's not worrisome. But it really is an easy way to see what's happening with your money. And I think it's really underutilized out there. I'm a big fan of, you want to do one thing that you're not doing now, even if you're successful, create a net worth statement. You could do it on a spreadsheet. You could just do it on paper and pen. We have here at Elliott Wealth Management some great financial planning software where it gets calculated by the software, because you could link your investment accounts, your mortgage, your credit card, your bank accounts all feed into the system, and then your net worth system, your net worth statement is created leveraging this technology. So there's a lot of ways you could do it, old fashioned, all the way up to leveraging some really great modern technology, but I'm a big believer in that. I also think tracking progress for entrepreneurs, especially that often have multiple streams of income, is also to have a spreadsheet or some way to see where you're getting income from. If you have a couple of properties and you have a business and you've invested in another business and you work and your wife has a side hustle, you know, you list down all of the incomes. and see where your income is coming from so that you have an idea of what cash flow is going to look like. What do you think about that?
Yeah, that's what the books are all about. You can draw so much information out of a good set of books. It's GIGO, garbage in, garbage out. Put in quality information, have a good set of books, or the equivalent. For example, the software you're talking about is in its way a set of books. And what measure excites you? I have bar graphs, and they're color-coded, and I don't like to see red. Red makes me very sad. I don't like the color. It irritates me. And green makes me very happy. And when I hit my goals, the bar goes green. I actually track by the day how much, for example, we're billing. And also, of course, on the financial type statements, net worth, net income, et cetera. Figure out what's both accurate, useful, but also satisfying, that triggers the little dopamine gland, wherever the heck that thing is in the back of your head, and gives you that little rush when you see it. And those types of measures will help you immensely.
So I think that was incredibly important. And so it's the first thing is accurate. What was the second thing?
Useful. Sometimes we track things that it turns out are not that useful.
And then the last one was satisfying?
Satisfying, yeah. Where's the dopamine rush?
I think that is awesome. I love that. And I'm going to steal that for sure. And I just want to be clear, you're not billing me for this, right?
No, lamentably not.
So hopefully we're not creating any red for you. The next thing I wanted to speak about is the power of diversification. I especially think this is important when you deal with small business owners, and even more especially, is that good English, John? It may not be. For real estate investors, I don't believe you should have large concentrations in wealth in one place that you subject yourself to the risk of getting what I say is like blown up. I think you ought to be diversified. Often financial planners in the investment realm, you talk about being diversified where you have small cap stocks, large cap stocks, international stocks combined with some bonds, you're diversified. And I believe in that as well. That's super important. But I also believe that you could combine that traditional investing stocks and bonds with real estate, small business ownership, money in the bank, other assets that you can build to create diversification. For me, as an example, you know, I have three prongs to my wealth building. I have the value in my business, my practice as a small business owner myself. I want to drive the value of my business higher. I want it to be more profitable, generate revenues, and also be marketable, that if I ever wanted or needed to sell it, it could be sold and would be valuable to somebody else. I also have my investment portfolio of traditional stocks and bonds, 401ks, IRAs, 529 plan college funds, money in the bank. That's the second component. And then the last component is a portfolio of real estate. I have residential real estate as well as commercial real estate. Now, that doesn't need to be the formula for everyone, but I'm a big believer in diversified, because sometimes my real estate may not be performing up to par, but then I have the other pieces of the puzzle that might be doing perfectly well, and they're likely to change positions over time. What is your thoughts about diversification?
I have a different bias. My personal bias, and I've paid for it, but I've also benefited from it, I diversify less in the traditional sense when I feel comfortable that I'm very, very good at a few things, in which case I tend to focus my strength on those very, very few things I'm good at. Now, I suppose I diversify some in the sense of, for example, almost all my investment is in real estate. I do very little in the markets and so on.
Okay.
There is some diversification, however, within the real estate, and given that some of it's free and clear, I can lose some rent, but I probably won't go to zero. So that's okay. Diversification of risk in a way.
Absolutely.
But I'm just
You've
so comfortable with real estate.
By not having debt, and when something bad happens, it's much easier to absorb shocks or interruptions in income when you don't have debt service.
So I guess without it being technically diversification, it's still, how about this? Part of my posture is defensive, so that when things don't go as planned, sure, I'm able to take the hit.
So you have a larger concentration of real estate than what I'm talking about, but you feel comfortable because you've mitigated your risk, which is what diversification is meant to do, by having lots of your real estate debt-free, meaning that you could withstand things better than somebody that's leveraged, especially highly leveraged. Is that a good description?
Yeah, and add to it, why did I become a tax lawyer? A lot of reasons. One of them is I didn't figure government would get any smaller, much as I would like it to. And so I also feel very safe that, you know, I can make enough, especially if my debt's low, I can make enough to feed myself working an hour a day.
Very good. So you're definitely living within your means, even though I would hope that you're having a blessed life that's very fulfilling and enjoyable, and, you know, you're not, you know, going to be scrounging in the trash heap for your lunch today.
You know, let me go slightly off tangent.
Yeah.
One of the things we end up talking to clients about a lot when we get into the why, and things come out. You'd be surprised at some of the things that come out. A sense of gratitude is so useful and keeps me so centered and balanced. I don't want to die tomorrow, but if I did, I did what I was supposed to do. I brought up some great kids. I've lived in the golden age of man. And yeah, we got issues. Humans always have had issues. And certainly some of the political stuff is very disheartening. But people have been through way worse, way worse. We live in a golden age, and I'm so thankful for it. I'm not poking the dirt with a stick, hoping that eight of us can feed seven, and then the king comes and takes the other one-eighth or more. It's pretty good, and I'm happy about that.
I think that's beautifully said, and it ties into money, because if you do pursue, like, I'm never going to have, I'm always going to want more, and I'm never going to be satisfied, when you're thinking about things in terms of competition and the alpha male or the A personality, that's all well and good, but to a certain point, that is destructive. And being satisfied and at peace and content, especially when most people, especially Americans, have so many blessings in their lives, I think that it is a tangent because it's not specifically about building wealth, but it's a great life philosophy. So thanks so much for sharing that. Hey, I have one more. I appreciate you hanging with me. The last of my wealth building rules is be careful with debt. And so usually I set this up when I speak with folks, John, is that to me there's like two different ends of the spectrum. On one hand, you have Dave Ramsey, the author of The Total Money Makeover, wildly successful book. Dave Ramsey also has one of the most successful podcasts out there, huge community. Very successful man and the company he runs. And he is a no-debt guy. He would actually counsel to you that, you know, don't get a mortgage. You could save up money, although he's okay with a 15-year mortgage. But he basically does not want you to borrow money to go to college. No borrowing, even for small business owners. Very dogmatic, no debt. On the other end of the spectrum, another popular book, Rich Dad, Poor Dad, which I think is a great book, Robert Kiyosaki. He is very liberal in his advice about using debt in an effort to build wealth. He does divide it between good debt and bad debt, but he doesn't seem very discriminating about using debt to accumulate assets. And in my mind, those are two bookends. And I come, John, in between those two. I'm not as dogmatic as Dave Ramsey. I think sometimes it makes sense to borrow money. I think you need to be sober about it and careful. You don't want to blow yourself up. I've used debt effectively in building wealth. Sometimes it hasn't worked out, though, so I could see the dangers in it. But I also find Robert Kiyosaki's worldview about, yeah, buying real estate, don't worry about leveraging it. Just, you know, have loans, and then if the property goes up, you refinance out and buy more properties. I don't find that satisfying either, and that seems too dangerous, especially over the long term. So in summary, I'm okay with using debt, but I divide it into good debt and bad debt. You know, if you're using debt to acquire assets, that's good. Bad debt, credit cards, student loans, car loans, especially big car loans where you're overbuying car based on your income and assets, those are all impediments to building wealth. But you definitely, again, want to be careful with the use of debt because it's a dangerous tool and you don't want to blow yourself up. What are your thoughts on debt, especially because you deal with so many real estate investors and often you're using leverage with the buying and selling of properties?
All right, a couple of thoughts. Washington said of fire and of government, was it fire? He said it's a useful thing but a fearful master, something along those lines. That's okay. Debt. The debt reflects who and what you are. Now, I'm more in the Kiyosaki camp, but with the caveats of don't get sloppy. Here's the thing. I believe in taking advantage of human stupidity, and there's an awful lot of it. On the governmental level, the Soviets failed by trying to have a planned economy and putting a price on everything because they figured they could do it better than, you know, free people. We've done that with money, which is everything. Money can buy almost everything. By putting a price on money artificially, we are regulating. And right now, and for the foreseeable future, we're actually in an anomaly of we're starting to head for negative interest rates. I don't even think that was possible before electronic money. So what's my point? Debt right now is artificially cheap. So I am more prone to using it and taking advantage of it with the caveat that I better have a fairly conservative income ratio. So the assets I acquire, I don't like using debt to sit on something on the theory that it's going to appreciate. I don't like that at all, because now you got to eat the payments, and you may eat them for a lot longer than you would like. But in terms of an income-producing asset that can easily cover the debt, which given how cheap debt is now, that's not as hard to do. Granted, it's also a spiral effect because it drives up the price of the assets, and it's getting harder to find reasonably priced assets. If it's a reasonable coverage ratio, given how artificially cheap debt is, I'm in favor of using it. I totally agree that it should not be used for personal stuff. Then you're living the American flaw, the American fantasy of buying luxury today, paying for it later. Well, we're getting ready to pay for it, and I don't think it's going to be very pretty. So I think I'm with Kiyosaki. I like the idea of good debt and bad debt. I think good debt is covered by an income-producing asset, conservatively so.
Would you counsel most people most of the time, I'm sure there's exceptions to any guideline, that if they owned a property that had debt on it, to refinance the debt, to cash out, to buy other properties? Because that's the kind of thing I could see where in special circumstances, unique opportunities, that might be pretty good. And I've met people that have done that strategy very successfully. But that's not something I think that I would participate in, except in extreme circumstances. What do you think
Depends on the quality of the asset. It depends on the quality of the asset that you're acquiring with the refi. It is very tax efficient to raise cash in that manner and live off of it. The problem with that is it becomes very tempting to cash out too much and not have conservative ratios that you can absorb a hit.
Right.
So I love the idea of free and clear or low debt properties with a line of credit on them, so that when a really nice deal appears, bam, you can jump on it.
Beautiful.
I like that quite a lot, but with discretion.
Hey, on the consumer debt side with car loans, I saw this statistic, which I think is alarming, and it shows why people like you and I are so valuable in the marketplace, because people make a lot of mistakes with money and miss a lot of opportunities, and they don't win with money as consistently as they should. Is what do you think the average car payment is in the country?
My gut feel would be $550.
Yeah, it's a little less. It's just under $500. But that's gone up a little bit over time. But the bigger thing is that the average length of the loans is going higher. So
that's gone way up.
6-year loans, which is not a good use of debt instruments. I think we could agree on that. That's bad borrowing.
It's people living beyond their means. It's the American way. Our government does it. We do it. There's going to be a price to pay. It's one reason rates are so low right now. The government doesn't dare raise rates, do you know what that would do to their already messed up budget?
Yes, I know. I had a political conversation with somebody recently about that, and the government really has a significant vested interest in keeping interest rates low to help with the budget and the deficit. I agree with you completely. Well, listen, John, thank you so much for spending this time with me. It was a great discussion because I really like my wealth building rules, but you put so much more into the conversation and the thinking for me and those that have heard me speak about these rules. So thanks so much for joining me. For individuals that would like more information about you or to follow you, where would they go?
IRALawyer.com, as in individual retirement account, because I do a lot with self-directed accounts. IRALawyer.com is probably the easiest one, and it may point to another site, but it's my site. I have several others.
Beautiful. John, again, thank you. It was a great discussion. Hopefully I can have you back on and we could talk about some other really interesting things, at least interesting for you and I. Would you come back on soon?
Yeah, I think we can have some fun. Maybe we'll do a non-topical bonus session, and we could do one while sober and one while not so much.
I think that would be good. And then maybe one of these times we could actually meet in person, maybe do the non-sober one the first time we meet.
So where in Florida are you at?
So I live in Connecticut, and I have two offices in Connecticut, and then I have an office in Florida in the Villages, which is in north central Florida, and it's one of the most prominent retirement communities in the entire country. So I split time between Connecticut and Florida. My folks are in the Villages, and I think over time I'm likely to spend more time in Florida, like a lot of people we know. But also, John, in my business, so many of my clients in Connecticut and in the Northeast are retiring and moving to Florida, or at least snowbirding in Florida. So from a business perspective, I made a decision similar to your decision to move to Puerto Rico recently, is to have an office, have an operation, have a greater presence in Florida so I can accommodate where my clients are going.
Sweet. Well, it's an easy flight from Puerto Rico, so we'll have to meet up there.
Beautiful. Sounds good. Thank you so much, John. Have a great day.
Take care. Bye-bye.
The views expressed are not necessarily the opinion of SagePoint Financial Incorporated and should not be construed directly or indirectly as an offer to buy or sell any securities mentioned herein. Investing is subject to risks, including loss of principal invested. Past performance is not a guarantee of future results. No strategy can assure a profit nor protect against loss. Please note that individual situations can vary. Therefore, the information should be relied upon when coordinated with individual professional advice. Please note, the information being provided is strictly as a courtesy. When you link to any of the websites provided here, you are leaving this website. We make no representation as to the completeness or accuracy of the information provided at these websites, nor is the company liable for any direct or indirect technical or system issues or any consequences arising out of your access to your use of third-party technologies, websites, information, and programs made available through this website. When you access one of these websites, you are leaving our website and assume total responsibility and risk for your use of the websites you are linking to. Securities and advisory services are offered through SagePoint Financial Incorporated, member FINRA SIPC, insurance services offered through Elliott Wealth Management, LLC, not affiliated with SagePoint Financial.
Simply Financial is part of the Exvadio Podcast Network. You can find Exvadio Podcasts at exvadio.com/podcast, the Apple Podcasts app, iTunes Store, iHeartRadio app, Spotify, Stitcher, and wherever you find podcasts. So join